This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Looking for something? In this mess, good luck with that. She found a small plot of empty concrete and stalled, thinking, examining, knowing she'd been there before, in a dream, in a daze. She noticed a thin metal cabinet painted a putrid brown, where three jackets hung on a rod. They all had insignias from the EF military embroidered on their sleeves. Squaring her shoulders, Cinder picked her way toward it and pushed the jackets to the side. "Really, Cinder?" said Thorn, coming up beside her. "This is not the time to be worried about a change of clothes." Cinder barely heard him over the ticking in her head. The mess was no coincidence. Someone had been there, and they'd been looking for something. They'd been looking for her. She wished the realization hadn't struck, but there was no dismissing it. Crouching in front of the cabinet, she slid her hand against the back corner until it brushed against the handle she'd known would be there. Painted the same brown color, it was invisible in the shadows. It would never be noticed unless a person knew to look, and she knew, because she'd been here. 5 years ago, in a state of drugged-up delirium that she'd always mistaken for a dream, she'd emerged in this spot, every joint and muscle aching from the recent surgeries, crawling slowly out of endless darkness and blinking, as if for the first time, into a dizzyingly bright world. Cinder braced herself against the cabinet and pulled. The secret door was heavier than she'd expected, made of something much sturdier than tin. She heaved it up on hidden hinges and let it slam down on the concrete. A cloud of dust billowed up on all sides. A square hole gaped up at them. A ladder of plastic rungs was drilled into the foundation, leading to a secret sublevel. Thorn bent over, planting his hands on his knees. "How did you know that was there?" Cinder couldn't tear her gaze away from the hidden passageway. Unable to voice the truth, she said simply, "Cyborg vision." She descended first, releasing her flashlight as she was hit with thick, stale air. The beam bounced around the room as big as the hangar above, with no doors and no windows. Almost afraid to know what she'd stumbled into, she tentatively ventured, "Lights on." She heard the sound of an independent generator click on first, before three long overhead fluorescents gradually brightened, one after another. Thorn's shoes thumped on the hard floor as he skipped the last four rungs of the ladder. He spun around and froze. "What? What is this?" Cinder couldn't answer. She could barely breathe. A tank sat in the center of the room, about 2 meters long, with a domed glass lid. A collection of complex machines stood around it. Life monitors, temperature gauges, bioelectricity scanners, machines with dials and tubes, needles and screens, plugs and controls. A long operating table against the far wall held an array of movable lights, sprouting from each end like a metal octopus, and beside it, a small rolling table with a near-empty jug of sterilizer, an assortment of surgical tools, scalpels, syringes, bandages, face masks, towels. On the wall were two blank net screens. As much as that side of the secret chamber imitated an operating room, the opposite side more closely resembled Cinder's workshop in the basement of Audrey's apartment building, complete with screwdrivers, fuse pullers, and a soldering iron. Discarded android parts and computer chips, an unfinished three-fingered cyborg hand. Cinder shuddered, chilled from the air that smelled like both a sterile hospital room and a damp underground cave. Thorn crept toward the tank. It was empty, but the vague imprint of a child could be seen in the goo-like lining beneath the glass dome. "What's this?" Cinder went to fidget with her glove before remembering that it wasn't there. "A suspended animation tank," she said, whispering as if the ghost of unknown surgeons could be listening. "Designed to keep someone alive, but unconscious for long periods of time. Aren't those illegal? Overpopulation laws or something? Cinder nodded. Nearing the tank, she pressed her fingers to the glass and tried to remember waking up here, but she couldn't. Only addled memories of the hangar and the farm came back to her. Nothing about this dungeon. She hadn't been fully conscious until she'd been en route to New Beijing, ready to start her new life as a scared, confused orphan and a cyborg. The girl's outline in the goo seemed too small to have ever been hers, but she knew it was. The left leg appeared to have been significantly heavier than the right. She wondered how long she'd lain there without any leg at all. "What do you suppose is doing down here?" Cinder licked her lips. "I think it was hiding a princess." Chapter 32. Cinder's feet were cemented to the ground as she took in the underground room. She couldn't shake the vision of her 11-year-old self lying on that operating table as unknown surgeons cut and sewed and pieced her body together with foreign steel limbs. Wires in her brains, optobionics behind her retinas, synthetic tissue in her heart, new vertebrae, grafted skin to cover the scar tissue. How long had it taken? How long had she been unconscious, sleeping in this dark cellar? Lavanna had tried to kill her when she was only 3 years old. Her operation had been completed when she was 11. 8 years in a tank, sleeping and dreaming and growing. Not dead, but not alive either. She peered down into the imprint of her own head beneath the tank's glass. Hundreds of tiny wires with neural transmitters were attached to the walls, and a small net screen was implanted on the side. No, not a net screen, Cinder realized. No net access could infiltrate this room. Nothing that could ever get back to Queen Lavanna. "I don't get it," said Thorn, examining the surgical tools on the other side of the room. "What do you think they did to her down here?" She peered up at the captain, but there was no suspicion on his face, only curiosity. "Well," she started, "programmed and implanted her ID chip, for starters." Thorn shook the scalpel at her. "Good thinking. Of course she wouldn't have had her own when she came to Earth." He gestured at the tank. "What about all that?" Cinder gripped the tank's edges to steady her hands. "Her burns would have been severe. Even life-threatening. Their priority would have been keeping her alive and also keeping her hidden. Suspended animation would solve both problems." She tapped a finger on the glass. "These transmitters would have been used to stimulate her brain while she was sleeping. She couldn't receive life experience or learn like a normal child, so they had to make up for it with fake learning, fake experiences." She bit her lip, silencing herself before she mentioned the net link they'd planted in the princess's brain that made for an efficient way to learn when she was finally awake, without being any the wiser that she should have known these things anyway. It was easy to talk about the princess as if she were someone else. Cinder couldn't stop thinking that she was someone else. The girl who had slept in this tank was someone different from the cyborg that had woken up in it. It occurred to Cinder with a jolt that this was why she had no memories, not because the surgeons had damaged her brain while inserting her control panel, but because she had never been awake to make memories in the first place. If she thought back, could she grasp something from before the coma? Something from her childhood? And then she recalled her recurring dream, the beds of coals, the fire burning off her skin, and realized it may have been more memory than nightmare. Screen on. Both screens over the operating table brightened at Thorne's command. The one on the left output a holograph of a torso from the shoulders up, spinning and flickering in the air. Cinder's heart jolted, thinking it was her, until she took in the second screen. Patient, Michelle Benoit. Operation, spinal and nervous system. Bioelectricity security block. Prototype 4.6. Status, complete. Cinder approached the holograph. The shoulders were slender and feminine, but nothing could be seen above the line of her jaw. What's a bioelectricity security block? Cinder pointed at the holograph as it spun away from her, and a dark square spot appeared on the spine, just beneath her skull. This, I had one implanted too, so I wouldn't accidentally use my lunar gift when I was growing up. In an earthen, it makes it so you can't be brainwashed by lunars. If Michelle Benoit did have information about Princess Selene, she would have had to protect herself in case she ever fell into lunar hands. If we have the technology to nullify the lunar's craziness, why doesn't everyone have one of these? A wave of sadness washed over her. Her stepfather, Lynn Garin, had invented the bioelectricity block, but he died of the plague before seeing it pass the prototype stage. Though she'd barely known him, she couldn't help feeling that his life had been cut far too short. How different things could have been if he'd survived, not only for Pearl and Peony, but for Cinder, too. She sighed, tired of thinking, and said simply, "I don't know why." Thorn grunted, "Well, this proves it, doesn't it? The princess really was here." Cinder scanned the room again, her attention catching on the table of mechanics, the tools that had made her cyborg. Thorn either hadn't noticed them or hadn't yet figured out what they would have been used for. The confession settled on the tip of her tongue. Maybe he should know. If she was going to be stuck with him, he deserved to know who he was traveling with, the true danger she'd put him in. But before she could speak, he said, "Screen, show Princess Selene." Cinder spun back around, pulse rushing, but it was not an 11-year-old version of herself that greeted her. What she saw was hardly recognizable as human at all. Thorn stumbled back, clapping a hand to his mouth. "What the?" Cinder's stomach heaved once before she shut her eyes, tempering the revulsion. She swallowed hard and dared to look at the screen again. It was a photo of a child, what was left of a child. She was wrapped in bandages from her neck to the stump of her left thigh. Her right arm and shoulder were uncovered, showing the skin that was gouged bloody red in spots, bright pink and glossy in others. She had no hair, and the burn marks continued up her neck and across her cheek. The left side of her face was swollen and disfigured. Only the slit of her eye could be seen, and a line of stitches ran along her earlobe before cutting across to her lips. Cinder raised a trembling fingers to her mouth, smoothing them over the skin. There was no scar, no sign of these wounds, only some scar tissue around her thigh and wrist where the prosthesis had been attached. How had they fixed her? How could they possibly fix this? But it was Thorn who asked the true question. Who would do this to a child? Goosebumps covered Cinder's skin. There was no memory of the suffering those burns must have caused her. She couldn't connect the child with herself. But Thorn's question lingered, haunting the cold room. Queen Lavanna had done this to a child, barely more than a baby, to her own niece. And all so she could rule, so she could claim the throne, so she would be queen. Cinder clenched her fists at her sides, her blood boiling. Thorn was watching her, his expression equally dark. "We should go talk to Michelle Benoit," he said, setting down the scalpel. Cinder blew a strand of hair out of her face. The ghost of her child self lingered in the air here, a victim struggling to stay alive. How many people had helped rescue and protect her, had kept her secrets? How many had risked their lives because they believed hers was worth more, because they believed she could grow into someone powerful enough to stop Lavanna? Nerves scratching at her stomach, she followed Thorn back up into the hangar, making sure to close the hidden door behind them. As they walked back into the daylight, the house still towered eerily still and silent above a small garden. The rampion stood enormous and out of place in the fields. Thorn checked his port screen, and his voice was tight when he spoke. She hadn't moved since we got here. He didn't try to hide his stumping footsteps across the gravel. He pounded on the front door, every strike bouncing around the courtyard. They waited for the telltale footsteps within, but only the sound of chickens scratching in the yard greeted them. Thorn checked the knob, and the door swung open, unlocked. Stepping into the foyer, Thorn peered up the wood panel stairway. To their right was a living room filled with rugged furniture. To their left, a kitchen with a couple of dirty plates left at the table. All the lights were off. "Hello?" Thorn called. "Miss Benoit?" Cinder called up a net link and traced the signal to Michelle Benoit's ID chip. "The signal is coming from upstairs," she whispered. The stairs groaned beneath the weight of her metal leg. Small screens lined the wall, alternating pictures of a middle-aged woman in a pilot uniform and a child with flaming red hair. Though chubby and covered in freckles as a child, later pictures showed her quite stunning, and Thorn gave a low, "Hello, Scarlet," as they passed. "Miss Benoit?" Cinder called again. Either the woman was a very deep sleeper, or they were about to stumble across something that Cinder was sure she didn't want to see. Her hand shook as she pushed open the first door off the stairs, preparing herself not to scream if she spotted a decaying body sprawled across the bed. But there was no body. The room was in upheaval just as the hangar had been, clothes and shoes, trinkets and blankets, but no human being, no corpse. "Hello?" Glancing around the room, Cinder spotted the vanity beside the window, and her heart fell. She paced to it and picked up the small chip and held it up for Thorn to see. "What's that?" he asked. "Michelle Benoit," she said. Sighing, she dismissed the netlink. "You mean she's not here?" "Try to keep up," Cinder grumbled, and pushed past him into the hallway. She planted her fists on her hips and scanned the other closed door, no doubt another bedroom. The house was abandoned. Michelle Benoit wasn't here, and neither was her granddaughter. No one with any answers. "How do you track a person who doesn't have an ID chip?" Thorn said. "We don't," she said. "That's the whole point of removing it." "We should talk to the neighbors. They might know something." Cinder groaned. "We're not talking to anyone. We're still fugitives, in case you've forgotten." She stared at the rotating pictures, Michelle Benoit and a young Scarlet, kneeling proudly beside a freshly planted vegetable bed. "Come on," she said, dusting her hands as if she was the one who had been digging in the dirt. "Let's get out of here before the rampion attracts any attention." The floorboards clapped hollowly beneath her as she tromped down the stairs and rounded the first landing. The front door swung open. Cinder froze. A pretty girl with honey blonde curls froze in front of them. Her eyes widened, first with surprise, then recognition. They fell to Cinder's cyborg hand, and the color drained from her cheeks. "Bonjour, mademoiselle," said Thorn. The girl glanced up at him, then her eyes rolled back into her head, and she collapsed onto the tile floor. Chapter 33. Cinder cursed and glanced back at Thorn, but he only shrugged. She turned back to the fainted girl. Her head was bent at an awkward angle against an entry table, her feet splayed across the doorway. "Is it her granddaughter?" Cinder asked, even as her scanner was connecting the measurements of the girl's face to the database in her brain and coming up with nothing. Scarlet Benoit, it would have recognized. "Never mind," she said, and inched toward the girl's prone body. She nudged the table out of the way, and the girl's head thumped onto the tiles. Creeping over her, Cinder peered out the front door. A beat-up hover sat in the courtyard. "What are you doing?" said Thorn. "Looking." Cinder turned around to see Thorn stepping into the foyer, eyeing the girl with mild curiosity. "She seems to be alone." A wicked grin spread across his face. We should take her with us. Cinder glared. Are you crazy? Crazy in love. She's gorgeous. You're an idiot. Help me carry her into the living room. He made no argument, and a moment later the girl was swooped up in his arms without Cinder's help. Here, on the couch. Cinder bustled ahead of him and rearranged a few faded pillows. I'm good like this. Thorne shifted his arms so the girl's head fell against his chest, her blonde curls clinging to the zipper of his leather jacket. Thorne, put her down now. Muttering something to himself, he laid the girl down and meticulously arranged her shirt to cover her bared stomach, and then moved down to more comfortably position her legs when Cinder grabbed him by the back of the collar and hauled him to his feet. Let's get out of here. She definitely recognized us. The moment she wakes up, she'll have a comm to the police. Thorne pulled a port screen out of his jacket pocket and handed it to Cinder. What's that? Her port. I took it off her while you were busy panicking. Cinder snatched the port screen away and shoved it into the side pocket of her military cargoes. Still, it won't be long before she tells someone, and they'll come to investigate and realize we were looking for Michelle Benoit, and then they'll be looking for Michelle Benoit, and maybe I should disable her hover before we go. I think we should stay and talk to her. Maybe she'll know where to find Michelle. Stay and talk to her and give her even more leads about how to track up? That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Hey, I like my idea of bringing her along, but you already vetoed that idea. So now I'm resorting to plan B, which is to interrogate her, and I'm really looking forward to it. I used to play a game called Interrogation with one of my old girlfriends where we... That's enough! Cinder raised her hand, silencing him. This is a bad idea. I'm leaving now. You can stay here with your girlfriend if you like. She marched past him. Thorne stayed on her heels. Now that was definitely jealousy, I just heard. A whimper stopped them both halfway to the front door, and they turned to see the girl's eyelashes fluttering open. Cinder cursed again and tugged Thorne toward the entryway, but he didn't budge. After a moment, he peeled himself out of her grip and meandered back into the living room. Terror flashed over her face, and she sat up, pushing herself against the arm of the sofa. Don't be alarmed, said Thorne. We're not going to hurt you. You're those people from the net screens, the fugitives, she said in an endearing European accent. She gaped at Cinder. You're the escaped lunar cyborg fugitive, Thorne offered. The last bit of color drained from the girl's face. Cinder prayed for patience. Are you going to kill me? No, of course not. Thorne slid himself onto the other end of the sofa. We just want to ask you a few questions, the girl gulped. What's your name, love? She chewed on her lower lip, eyeing Thorne with a mixture of distrust and mild hope. Emily, she breathed, barely audible. Emily, a beautiful name for a beautiful girl. Fighting back the urge to gag, Cinder thumped her head against the doorframe. It brought the girl's attention back to her, and Emily shriveled away in fear again. Sorry, said Cinder, holding out both hands. It's really nice to meet... Emily broke into hysterical crying. Her focus latched onto Cinder's metal hand. Please don't kill me. I won't tell anyone I saw you. I promise. Please don't kill me. Jaw dropping, Cinder stared at the offensive limb for a second before realizing it wasn't her cyborg half that the girl was afraid of. It was the lunar in her. She glanced at Thorne, who was glaring accusations at her, before throwing her arms into the air. Fine, you take care of it, she said and marched out of the room. She sat down on the stairs where she could hear Thorne trying to calm the girl while keeping an eye on the road through the front windows. She folded her elbows on the top of her knees and listened to Thorne's cooing and Emily's sobs and tried to rub away an oncoming headache. Once, people had looked at her with revulsion, Now people were terrified of her. She wasn't sure which was worse. She wanted to scream to the world that it wasn't her fault she was this way. She'd had nothing to do with it. It surely wouldn't have been her choice if one had been given to her. Lunar, cyborg, fugitive, outlaw, outcast. Cinder buried her face in her arms and urged the swirling injustices away. She would not get carried away with self-loathing. She had too many other things to worry about. In the next room, she could hear Thorne mentioning Michelle Benoit, pleading with the girl to tell her something, anything useful, but all she got back were blubbery apologies. Cinder sighed, wishing there were some way she could convince the girl they meant her no harm, that they were in fact the good guys. Her body tensed. She could convince the girl of that, quite easily. Guilt flooded her veins a moment later, but it didn't quite dispel the temptation. She scanned the horizon, still seeing no sign of civilization beyond the fields. She folded her fingers together, debating. "You do know Michelle Benoit, don't you?" Thorne said, his tone taking on an edge of pleading. "I mean, you are in her house. This is her house, isn't it?" Cinder massaged her thumbs over her temples. She was not like Queen Lavanna and her thaumaturges and all the other Lunars who abused this gift, brainwashed and cajoled and controlled others for their own selfish gains. But if controlling someone were for the greater good, and only for a short time. "Emily, please stop crying. It's just a simple question, really." "Fine," Cinder muttered, pushing herself off the stairs. "It's for her own good, after all." Taking in a breath to dispel the guilt, she stepped back into the living room. The girl's gaze whipped toward her, eyes puffed. She cowered away. Cinder forced herself to relax and let the gentle tingle slip down her nerves, thinking kind, friendly, welcoming thoughts. "We're your friends," she said. "We're here to help you." Emily's eyes brightened. "Emily, can you tell us where Michelle Benoit is?" A last tear slipped unnoticed down Emily's cheek. "I don't know where she is. She disappeared 3 weeks ago. The police never found anything." "Do you know anything about her disappearance?" "It happened in the middle of the day when Scarling was out doing her deliveries. She didn't have a hover or a shift. She didn't seem to take any belongings with her. Her ID chip had been removed and left behind, along with her port screen." It took all of Cinder's focus to maintain the aura of friendliness and trust when disappointment started to settle in. "But I think Scarlet may have known something." Cinder perked up. "She was going to look for her. She left a couple of days ago and asked me to watch the farm. It seemed she had some lead, but she didn't tell me what it was. I'm so sorry." "Have you heard from Scarlet since?" asked Thorne, leaning forward. Emily shook her head. "Nothing. I'm worried about her, but she's a tough girl. She'll be all right." Her expression brightened like a child. "Have I helped? I want to help." Cinder flinched at the girl's eagerness. "Yes, you helped. Thank you. If you think of anything else—" "One more question," said Thorne, holding up a finger. "Our ship is in need of some repairs. Are there any good parts stores nearby?" Chapter 34. Scarlet's sleep was restless, filled with thaumaturges and prowling wolves. When she'd managed to pull herself from the daze, she saw that two trays of food had been left for her. Her stomach growled upon seeing them, but she ignored it, instead rolling over and curling up on the filthy mattress. Many years ago, someone had sketched their initials on the dressing room wall, and Scarlet traced her fingertips over them. Were they the work of a rising opera star in the Second Era, or prisoner of war? Had they died in this room? She leaned her forehead against the cool plaster. The scanner beeped in the hallway, and the door clanked open. Scarlet rolled onto her back and froze. Wolf was standing in the doorway, having to duck his head to keep from hitting the frame. His eyes pierced through the darkness, but they were the only thing about him that hadn't changed. His once messy, spiky hair had been combed off his brow, making his handsome features appear too sharp, too cruel. He washed the dirt from his face and now wore the same uniform she'd seen on the other soldiers, a maroon shirt and rune-decorated guards on his shoulders and forearms, a series of belts and sashes held empty holsters. She briefly wondered if Wolf preferred to fight without weaponry, or if he simply hadn't been allowed to bring any guns into her cell. She leaped off the bed, instantly regretting it as the world tilted beneath her, and she had to brace herself against the wall. Wolf remained silent, watching, until their gazes clashed across the room, his dark and expressionless, hers growing more hateful, more angry by the second. Scarlet! A hint of struggle crossed his face. Her revulsion tore through her, and she screamed. She had no memory of crossing the room, but the crunch of her fists as they struck his jaw, his ear, his chest thundered up her arms. He allowed her five strikes with nothing more than a grimace before stopping her. He caught her wrists mid-swing, holding them fast against his stomach. Scarlet reeled back and aimed her heel for his kneecap, but he whipped her around so fast she lost her balance and found herself facing away from him, her arms locked in his grip. "Let me go!" she screeched, aiming her foot for his toes, stomping and screaming and thrashing, but if she hurt him, he showed no sign of it. She craned her neck and snapped her teeth, though she had no hope of actually biting him. Instead, with a painful twist of her neck, she managed to land a gob of spit on his jaw. He flinched again but didn't release her, didn't even look at her. "You traitor! You bastard! Let me go!" She lifted her knee for another backward kick when he obeyed, releasing her. She collapsed forward with a yelp. Scarlet scurried away, clenching her jaw. Her knees throbbed, and she had to use the wall to pull herself back to standing. She swung around to face him. Her stomach roiled, and she was sure she would be sick with loathing and disgust and fury. "What?" she yelled. "What do you want?" Wolf scrubbed the spit from his chin with his wrist. "I had to see you." "Why? So you could gloat about what a fool you made me out to be? How easy it was to convince me that you..." A shudder ripped through her. "I can't believe I let you touch me." She squirmed, wiping her hands down her arms to dispel the memory. "Go away! Just leave me alone!" Wolf didn't move and didn't speak again for a long time. Spinning away, Scarlet crossed her arms over her chest and glared at the wall, shaking. "I lied to you about a lot of things," he finally said. She snorted. "But I meant every apology." She scowled, seeing bright spots on the wall. "I never wanted to lie to you or frighten you or... And I tried. In the train." "Don't you dare!" She faced him again, digging her nails into her arms to keep from lashing out and making an idiot of herself again. "Don't you even think about bringing that up or trying to justify what you did to me, what your people have done to my grandmother." "Scarlet." He took a step toward her, but she threw her hands up and backed away until her calves collided with the mattress. "Don't come near me. I don't want to see you. I don't want to listen to you. I would rather die than ever be touched by you again." She saw a gulp straining against his throat. Hurt flashed across his face, but it only served to make her angrier. Wolf cast a glance toward the door, and Scarlet followed the look, noting that her usual guard was waiting outside, watching them as if they were a popular drama on the net screens. Her stomach twisted. "I'm sorry to hear that, Scarlet," Wolf said, turning back to her. His voice had lost the edge of regret and was all business and cruelty again. "Because I didn't come to apologize. I came for something else." She straightened. "I don't care what you..." He was at her in a single stride, his hands buried in her hair, pressing her against the wall. His mouth stifled her surprised cry and then an angry scream. She tried to shove him off her, but she'd have no more luck against the iron bars on the door. Her eyes went wide as she felt his tongue, and in a flash of rebellion she thought to bite him, but there was something else, something small and flat and hard being pressed into her mouth. Every muscle went taut. Wolf pulled away, his grip softened, cradling her head. His scars were a blur in her vision. She couldn't find her breath. Then he murmured, so quiet she could barely catch the words even as they steamed against her lips. "Wait until morning," he said. "The world won't be safe tonight." Wolf focused on his own fingers as he took a red curl between them. He flinched as if touching her pained him. Indignation returning, Scarlet swiped him away and darted beneath his arms. She fled to the corner of the room and crouched down on the bed. Covering her mouth with one hand, she smashed the other against the wall for balance. She waited, her entire body aflame, until Wolf slinked out of the room. The bars opened and shut. Outside, the guard snickered. "I suppose we all have our thing," he said, and their footsteps padded down the corridor. Slumping against the wall, Scarlet spit the foreign object into her palm. A small ID chip winked up at her. Book 4, The Better to Eat You With, My Dear. Chapter 35. "She's going to be fine, you know." Cinder jumped, startled from her reverie. Thorn was piloting the small pod ship into Rieu, France, and Cinder was somewhat amazed they hadn't crashed and died yet. "Who's going to be fine?" "That Emily girl. You shouldn't feel bad about knocking her out with your lunar mind trick thing. She'll probably be extra refreshed when she wakes up." Cinder screwed up her mouth. Her thought had been so preoccupied with finding a power cell and making it back to Eco before anyone else showed up at the farm that she'd hardly thought of the blonde girl they'd left behind. Oddly enough, when she made the decision to glamour the girl into trusting them, all the doubt and guilt she felt about it had faded away. It had seemed so natural, so easy, so clearly the right thing to do. The ease of it frightened her more than the lack of guilt. If it was so natural for her, after only a few days of practicing her new gift, how could she ever survive against a thaumaturge or the queen herself? "I just hope we're long gone before she wakes up," she muttered. Returning her focus to the window, Cinder redid her ponytail in the ghost reflection. She could vaguely make out her brown eyes and plain features. She tilted her head, wondering what she looked like with her glamour. She would never know, of course. Mirrors couldn't be fooled by glamours. But Thorn had sure seemed impressed, and Kai, "You're even more painful to look at than she is." His words made her whole body feel heavy. The town came into focus beneath them, and Thorn made a too fast descent. Jolting, Cinder grabbed for the harness around her waist. Thorn straightened the ship and coughed. There was a gust of wind. "Sure there was." She let her head fall against the rest. "You're extra gloomy today," Thorn said, nicking her chin. "Cheer up. We may not have found Michel Benoit, but now we know for sure that she housed the princess. This is good. This is progress. We found a ransacked house and were identified by the first civilian who spotted us." "Yeah, because we're famous." He sang the word with a certain measure of pride. When Cinder rolled her eyes, he nudged her in the arm. "Oh, come on. It could be worse." She quirked an eyebrow at him, and his grin broadened. "At least we have each other." He held out his arms like he would have given her a huge hug if they hadn't been strapped into their seats. The nose of the ship tipped to the right, and he quickly grasped the controls again, leveling it out just in time to dodge a flock of pigeons. Cinder covered a laugh with her metal hand. It wasn't until Thorn had landed crookedly on a cobblestone side street that Cinder began to realize what a bad idea this was. But they didn't have a choice. They needed a new power cell if they wanted to get the Rampian back into space. "People are going to see us," she said, glancing around as she emerged from the pod ship. The street was empty, serenely overshadowed by centuries-old stone buildings and silver-leafed maples, but the tranquility did nothing to quell her nerves. "And you are going to pull your very handy brainwashing magic on all of them, and they won't even know they're seeing us. Well, I mean, I guess they'll see us. They just won't recognize us. Oh, hey, can you make us invisible? Because that would come in handy." Cinder stuffed her hands into her pockets. "I don't know if I'm ready to trick a whole town. Besides, I don't like doing it. It makes me feel evil." She knew if her internal lie detector could see her, it would have recognized a lie. It felt all too right, and maybe that's what felt so horrendously wrong about it. Blue eyes twinkling, Thorn hooked his thumbs behind his belt. He looked slightly ridiculous in his fancy leather jacket in this quaint rural town, and yet he had the swagger of a man who belonged there, who belonged anywhere he wished to. "You might be a crazy lunar, but you're not evil, as long as you're using your glamour to help people, and more important, to help me, then there's nothing to feel guilty about." He stopped to check his hair in the dirty window of a shoe store while Cinder gawked after him. "I hope that wasn't your idea of a pep talk." Smirking, he jerked his head toward the next door. "Here we are," he said, pushing open a creaking wooden door. The hollow sound of digital bells greeted them, meshed with the smell of engine grease and burnt rubber. Cinder sucked in the scent of home. Mechanics, machinery, this is where she belonged. Though the shop had seemed prettily charming from outside with its stone facade and aged wooden windowsills, she could see now that it was enormous, stretching back the length of the town block. Near the front, towering metal shelves held replacement parts for androids and screens. Toward the back, Cinder could make out parts for the bigger machines, hovers and tractors and ships. "Perfect," she muttered, heading toward the back wall. They passed a young, acne-faced clerk sitting behind a work table, and though Cinder instantly called up her glamour, disguising her and Thorn as the first thing that came to mind, dirty, grungy farmhands, she doubted the ploy was necessary. The boy didn't even bother with a polite nod, his attention fixed on a port screen that emanated the upbeat tune of a game app. Cinder rounded the aisle of power converters and spotted a boulder of a man leaning against an engine lift, the only other customer in the store. His attention was focused on picking at his nails instead of browsing the shelves, and when he met Cinder's gaze, it was with a taunting smirk. Shoving her metal hand into her pocket, Cinder found the vibrations of his thoughts in the air and twisted them away. "You are not interested in us." But his smile only widened, sending a chill down her back. When he turned away a moment later, Cinder crept into the aisle, her attention divided between maintaining the glamour and scouring the mishmash parts until she found the power cell they'd come for. She snatched it off the shelf, gasping at its weight, and hurried back toward the front. Thorn exhaled as soon as they were out of the stranger's sight. "He scared me." Cinder nodded. "You should go start the pod ship in case we need to make a quick getaway." She dropped the power cell onto the clerk's desk with a thunk. The clerk didn't bother to look up, one hand still playing the game single-thumbed, while the other held the scanner out to Cinder. The red laser flickered across the counter. Dread settled in Cinder's stomach. The kid managed to pull his attention away from the game and gave her an irritated glare. Cinder gulped. Neither of them had any ID chip or any means of paying. Could she glamour her way out of that? She imagined Lavanna wouldn't have had any trouble. Before she could speak, something sparkly dangled in the corner of her eye. "Will this cover it?" said Thorn, holding out a gold-plated digital port screen watch. Cinder recognized it as the one Alak had been wearing, the man who owned the spaceship hangar in New Beijing. "Thorn," she hissed. "This isn't a pawn shop," said the boy. dropping the scanner gun onto the counter. "Can you pay or not?" Cinder glared at Thorn, but then she spotted the strange man plodding out of the aisle near the back of the shop, strolling toward them. He whistled a chirpy tune, then pulled a pair of thick work gloves out of one pocket and made a big show of pulling one onto his left hand. Heart hammering, Cinder turned back to the kid. "You want the watch?" she said. "It's a fine trade for this power cell, and you're not going to report us for taking it." The kid's eyes glazed over. He just started to nod when Thorn deposited the watch into his palm, and Cinder grabbed the power cell off the counter. They marched out the door, leaving the ringing of fake bells behind. "No more stealing," she said as Thorn fell into step beside her. "Hey, that watch saved us in there." "No, I saved us in there, and in case you already forgot, that is exactly the kind of mental trick that I don't want to pull on people." "Even if it saves your skin?"
"Yes."
A light flashed in Cinder's eyes, indicating an incoming calm. A moment later, words began tracking across her vision. "We've been detected. Police. We'll keep them out as long as possible." She stumbled in the middle of the street.
"What?"
said Thorn. "It's Eco. The police have found the ship." Thorn paled. "No time to shop for new clothes, then, or an android body. Come on." She took off running, Thorn keeping step until they spun around the corner and both skidded to a halt. Two policemen stood between them and their pod ship, one comparing the ship's model with something on his port screen. Something beeped on the other officer's belt. As he reached for it, Cinder and Thorn backed away, ducking around the building. Pulse racing, Cinder glanced up at Thorn, but he was scanning the nearest window. Ryu Tavern was painted off-center on the glass. "Here," he said, dragging her around two wrought iron tables and through the door. The tavern stank of booze and fried fat and was thrumming with sports on the net screens and uproarious laughter. Cinder took two steps inside, her breath caught, and she spun around to leave. Thorn blocked her path with an outstretched arm. "Where are you going?"
"There are too many people. We'll have better luck with the police."
She pushed past him, but froze when she spotted a green hover easing onto the cobblestones outside, the emblem of the Eastern Commonwealth military painted on its side.
"Thorn!"
His arm stiffened, and then the tavern seemed quiet. Cinder slowly faced the crowd, dozens of strangers gaping at her. A cyborg.
"Stars," she whispered. "I need to find a new pair of gloves."
"No, you need to calm down and start using your brainwave witchery thing." Cinder drew closer to Thorn and swallowed her growing panic.
"We belong here," she murmured.
Sweat beaded on the back of her neck, dripping down her spine.
"We're not suspicious. You don't recognize us. You have no interest or curiosity or..."
She trailed off as the attention of the people around the room began to drift back to their food and drinks and the net screens behind the bar. Cinder continued the mindless chanting in her head. "We belong here. We are not suspicious," until the statements blurred together into a sensation of invisibility. They weren't suspicious. They did belong here. She forced herself to believe it. Scanning the crowd, she saw that only one set of eyes was still on her, vibrant blue and filled with laughter. He was a muscular man sitting at a table near the back, a smile playing on his mouth. When Cinder's gaze held his, he sat back and lifted his attention to the screens.
"Come on, then," said Thorn, guiding her toward an open booth.
The sound of the door creaking behind them sent Cinder's stomach heaving like a dying motor. They slid into the booth.
"This was a bad idea,"
she whispered, tucking the power cell beside her on the bench. Thorn said nothing, both of them bending their necks over the table as three red uniforms brushed past. A scanner beeped, sending Cinder's pulse thrumming against her temples. And the last officer paused. With her cyborg hand beneath the table, Cinder deftly opened the barrel of her
embedded tranquilizer gun, the first time she'd engaged that finger since Dr. Erlin had given her the hand. The officer remained beside their booth, and Cinder forced herself to turn toward him, thinking, innocence, normal, indistinguishable from anyone else. The officer was holding a port screen with a built-in ID scanner. Cinder gulped and looked up. He was young, perhaps in his early 20s, and his face was contorted in confusion.
"Is there a problem, monsieur?" she said, sickened to hear her own voice come out as saccharine sweet as she once heard Queen Lavanna's.
His eyes blinked wildly. The attention of the other officers, one man and one woman, was captured too, and Cinder could see them hovering nearby. Heat spread out from the base of her neck, creeping uncomfortably down her limbs. She clenched her fists. The wash of energy in the room was pulsing, almost visible. Her optobionics were beginning to panic, sending concerned warnings about hormones and chemical imbalances across her eyesight, and all the while she desperately grasped control over her lunar gift. "I am invisible. I am unimportant. You do not recognize me. Please don't recognize me."
"Officer, you are,
His eyes darted from the port to her face, and he shook his head to dispel the cobwebs. "We're looking for someone, and this says you wouldn't happen to." Everyone was watching now. The waitresses, the customers, the eerie guy with the stormy eyes. No amount of internal pleading could make her invisible when a military officer from another country was speaking to her. She was becoming dizzy with the effort of it. Her body was warming, sweat beating on her brow. She gulped.
"Is everything all right, officer?"
His brow drew together. "We're looking for a girl, a teenager from the Eastern Commonwealth. You wouldn't happen to be Lynn?" Cinder raised her eyebrows, feigning ignorance.
"Peony?"
Chapter 36. Cinder's smile froze to her face. Peony's name was like a stone on her chest, pressing the air out of her lungs as memories fell across her vision. Peony scared and alone in the quarantines. Peony dying with the antidote still in Cinder's hand. The pain was instant, fire rippling through her muscles. Cinder cried out and gripped the table, nearly falling out of the booth. The officer stumbled back and his female comrade yelled, "It's her!" Cinder felt the table being shoved toward her as Thorn jumped up. It took a moment for the burning to dwindle. The taste of salt lingered on her tongue, and someone screamed, and in the muddle of her brain she heard chair and table legs screeching across the floor. The woman's voice, "Lynn, Cinder, we are taking you into custody." Red text flashed across her retina. Internal temp above recommended control temp. If cool-down procedure does not engage, automatic shutdown will occur in 1 minute. Lynn Cinder, slowly place your hands on top of your head. Do not make any sudden movements. She blinked past the bright fog in her vision, barely making out the officer with a gun pointed at her forehead. Behind her, Thorn was swinging a punch at the nose of the young man with the port, who ducked and then swung back. The third officer had his gun on the two men as they collapsed into a brawl onto a nearby table. Cinder took in a deep breath, glad that only a residue of the pain lingered beneath her skin. 50 seconds until automatic. She released her breath slowly. Shutdown countdown paused. Temperatures dropping. Cool-down procedures engaged. "Lynn Cinder," the woman said again, "put your hands on top of your head. I have been authorized to shoot, to kill, if necessary." She forgot that one of her fingertips was open, ready with a dart as it passed her gaze.